Okay, so Bamidbar, or Bimidbar technically, but if you say that anyway, trust me, I know. It's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha and my Ufrah Parsha. I know this Parsha well, but it's, yes, Bimidbar technically, correct. So it starts off with the organization of the camp, the leaders of the Shvatim, each of them around their flags and the senses, right? That takes up, you know, the first like 100 psukim or something like that of the parsha. And yes, you still have 3 Eliyot after that. Yes. So there is a strange midrash. And again, as usual, I'm always looking for something new. And as I've done many times in the last few weeks, I found it while I was, you know, working in Rabbi Price's thing. But especially in Bamidbar, it's always fun to find something a little bit new. And these are both traditions that I know, but I don't know if I'd ever seen the way the Midrash puts them together or really thought about it enough. So the Midrash has many, many attempts to explain the flags, right, the banners. But this is a little bit of an odd midrash. In Midrash Rabbah, it says, "V'shash niglah Kadosh Baruch Hu al Har Sinai, yardu imo eshem u'shtaim rivavot shel melachim." So when God came to Har Sinai, so 22,000 angels, or technically 22,000 or 22 myriads, right? So no, so that's 20. Wait, rivavot. It's 22,000s, right? 22,000s. Yes, 22,000s. Of so 220,000 of angels came down. Shnema Rechav Elohim Ribo Taim Alfe Shinan Vayukulam Asuyim Digalim Digalim. And then it says something very odd. Besides for all the angels coming down, which okay, I mean at Revelation, angels coming down, I don't know what else you expect exactly. But they were all made of flags or banners. Shne'emar, Dagul, Merivava. Quoting the Pasuk Shir HaShirim, Dagul, they were like preeminent, but literally, they were flagged or bannered of 10,000s. Kevan, Shera'u, Otan Yisrael, Shem Asuyim, Digalim, Digalim. When the Jews saw that they were made of flags, Hitchilu, Mitavim, La Digalim. They desired flags. Amru alavai kachanu naasim digalim kmota. And they said, if only we could make flags like them. Mekach ne'amar, aviyani ol ben ayayin, zesinayin mos atarash, mishal biyayin, vishatu biyayini. And they quote a bunch of other psukim. After he quotes all the psukim, this section ends, miyad hodiya hakadosh baruch hu otam Yisrael, Vamar le Moshe leich aseh otam digalim kemoshin davu. So God said, "Go make them flags as they desired." Okay, you want to try to parse that midrash there? No attempts. What? Okay. Okay, why explain?
Because it's essentially the same thing. They saw, oh, these angels have flags, we want flags. Oh, these are the ones who came to be.
Okay, so the first thing, which I don't think I'd noticed enough, but I think it's actually really key to this, which is even weirder, is that what's undeniable in the Midrash, what everything the Midrash is doing, is that it's somehow connecting the experience of Har Sinai to our Parsha. Right? I mean, you can't get out of that, right? That is clearly what it's doing, because it's saying something about this flag is in some way recreating something about Har Sinai. Now that's something we've talked about before, right? We've talked about that. That the Ramban's whole idea that the Mishkan is the recreation of Har Sinai, and therefore it's a traveling Har Sinai, right? We've talked about this before. We've definitely talked about this before, right? We've talked about it, you know. But the Ramban, right, thinks that the Mishkan is a traveling Har Sinai. So if it's a traveling Har Sinai, so in a certain sense, this right? This makes sense. You're saying that in some way the Jews' experience now in the camp is mimicking Har Sinai. So that's definitely apparent here in the Midrash. But then what do we do with these red flags? What does it mean that the angels have flags? So even though that's not technically what the Midrash says, right? It's asuyim degalim degalim, right? Which doesn't really sound like they have flags as much as they are flags, right? I mean, that's the simple shot, is that they are flags, right? Somehow they are flags, right? They are banners, which is even more ambiguous, right? Right? That's what it says, right? Right, the truth is I skipped a line here, but in the middle, right, v'diglu alai ahava, right, you banner upon me love, right, you represent, amru ilulei ayamagdil alai ahava, if only you express love, v'chene omer nami shuatech, amr lam kodesh baruch hu ma shenitavitem lasut galim chayeichem shenim malei mishalotchem, right, I promise you desire these flags, then I'll give them to you, right, so like, there's a lot. It's just weird, right? Like everything here is sort of odd. And honestly, the Mefarshim don't help that much here. I don't think. They try to understand the technical words here in the Midrash, but the solution here. So what's going on here? What's going on here? Now, again, I don't know how much you can really, really parse here, but I think that if you piece together some of the pieces of the Midrash here, this idea of flags is the angels representing God, representing, right, or their relationship with God. I'm not really sure, right, but something like that, right, that seems, right, they come down to Har Sinai either holding flags or as flags, clearly, like, in some way, right, they're God's entourage when they get the Torah, right, when the Jews get the Torah, right, and they are like, right, so in some way, right, that seems to be the flag. I mean, that is the purpose of flags, right, it represents an identity. Maybe that's a better word, right? An allegiance, right? That's really the phrase here. Diglu alai ahava, right? Expressing love, right? It's you represent a relationship, which means that probably this means something like at Har Sinai, the Malachim represented God or had an allegiance to God, and the Jews decided that they wanted that, right? So Rabbi Price connects this to a midrash, which is helpful, which is Moshe. This is a relatively well-known midrash, as we go to Shavuot, which is that when Moshe went to Har Sinai to get the Torah, the angels said, "How could you give the Jews the Torah? Right, this is the Torah that was hidden for 974 generations before the world was created up in heaven, and you're going to give it to mere human beings." And Moshe argues with him, and he said, no, like, you don't need the Torah. You don't have parents to honor, right? You don't have desires that would lead you to murder, right? You don't experience anything with the Torah. The Torah is ours, and then they agree, and they give it to the Jews. They give it to Moshe. They celebrate him. They give him presents. But what you see in that midrash is that there is a Chazal have this idea of a machloket, an ongoing machloket, on who represents everything in the Torah. Like, who is the proper representative of God as expressed through the Torah? Right? Is it the angels, or is it human beings? And at some level, what that midrash really expresses is the passing of the torch. Right? Is that the angels think that it's theirs, and then they're convinced that they're not, and they allow, so to speak, for the Torah to pass on. Now, there's more going on there, because then you've got to figure out why is that, and there he argues that, you know, there's really two parts to the Torah. There's the theoretical Torah, the fact that it expresses universal metaphysical truths, which in a certain sense is supernal. It exists in heaven. And then there's like the mitzvot and the practical implementation of Torah, which clearly exists on earth. And this machlokes is a lot of like which Torah is primary, right? Which one really represents the ultimate goal of Torah and the ultimate goal of God. But he thinks that that's what that midrash is about, right? Is the malachim represent the idea that the main Torah is the theoretical one up in heaven, and the Jews stake out the position to know, like, the practical implemented Torah, that's really, right, if it remains in heaven, it's not meaningful. At some level, that might be what's going on here, right? Because if you have this idea that there's Har Sinai, and then there's, like, the Jews traveling Har Sinai, so you really have two models. You have, like, Har Sinai, where God expresses himself in the world, right, and there's revelation and everything is too heavenly and people are overwhelmed and, right, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but heaven comes on earth. And then there's the Sinai that is constantly accessible and constantly orients the way that the Jews travel. At some level, this might be a similar midrash, right, that the angels represent one relationship with God, one way of manifesting a relationship with God, right, which was seen in Har Sinai, and the Jews see it and they're like, we want that. Right, so God translates it and says, well, okay, fine. Right, I'll give it to you, and I'll let you forge that relationship, because in the end of the day, that's where the Torah belongs. Right, not the Sinai of revelation, which was just a means to sort of conveying God's will, but the continuing Sinai and the relationship that it manifests. And therefore, God says, you want it? It's yours, right? Like, that's exactly what I want. I want you to want that relationship and represent me and declare your allegiance to me in the more human version of Har Sinai, the more mundane version of Har Sinai, as it were. Right, I probably have to add something which is definitely homiletics, but I think it's a beautiful homiletics, so I'll just add it here, where he notes that this comes up specifically in the context of Bamidbar, where the emphasis is not just flags, but what's the, right, if you had to sort of say, what are the, like, the two emphases here? One is flags, but the other is, right, who is oriented around the flag? Family, right? Lemishpotam, Levetavotam. So he has this fascinating, I really have to unpack it, but it's a fascinating homiletic read of a totally different midrash, a very well-known midrash as well, that the midrash says that God wanted to give the Torah to Adam, and then he said, I can't give it to Adam because I tried giving him six mitzvot, it didn't work out so well, how can I give him 613, and he doesn't, okay? That part of the midrash is not as well known as the second part, which is then you get the machloket about what is the most important pasuk in the Torah. And Ben Azai says, Zeh Sefer Toldot HaAdam. Zeh Klal Gadol BaTorah. This is the most important pasuk in the Torah. Simply, the pasuk says, these are the children of man. So, right, Price comes up with this beautiful homiletic, which is as follows. Adam is the only person in the history of the world who, by definition, didn't have the advantage of being educated by parents. He was born as an adult, right? And he said, he thinks that that's what this midrash wants from you. That zet sefer toldot ha'adam. Adam can't get it because Adam was never a child, right? He was born fully formed, and Torah doesn't work that way, right? Definitional to Torah is toldot ha'adam. You have to be a child of someone because you need to be educated by human beings, right? You can't just be born as, right, by God, and then really integrate the Torah. The whole point, the same thing we talked about in this midrash, that there's that imperfection, that there's that growth, right? You need to be a person, you need to be educated. And therefore, Ben Azai says, Zeh Sefer Toldot HaAdam, right? The key to the Torah is that you need to be a child, right? You need to have once been a child. And therefore, he argues that that's part of this as well, that what gives the Jews the right to have the Degalim, rather than the angels, is the fact that they don't just, it doesn't just represent the Shevet, but it's just Hotam Lebeda Votam, that they have an educational structure and therefore can raise people in God's ways, and that's what allows them to accomplish what angels can. Because angels like Adam are created by God and a certain level perfect, but that's not what the Torah is about. The whole idea that the Torah is physical and needs to be implemented is most seen in the fact that it's given to people who go through a growth process. right, who have families and are educated by their parents, and the fact that you put that symbol of that relationship and growth around the families is actually representative of why human beings are more cut out to get the Torah than the angels, which I think is a beautiful homiletic. I think it's a homiletic, but I think it's a beautiful homiletic. And I never really thought about that, right? That Adam is the only person who never had, was never a child, right? I never would have put it together that that's the reason that you need to, but it's a really, again, it's a homiletic idea, but it's a really beautiful idea. Like, I, you know, that he can't get the Torah because he's the only person who never had a childhood and was never educated, right? He just was born fully made, and that's anathema to the Torah's growth. So for Rabbi Price, that's central as well to this midrash, that the fact that those degalim are around the Shechazan Levet Avotam is that part of it is telling you that what makes it that the Torah, which is built around pragmatism and implementing things in an imperfect world, is the fact that it needs families and everything that's sort of captured in that structure to express why it's worthwhile in this world. Which I thought was a really nice idea. Definitely a little bit of drash and maybe a little bit of shot in the midrash. But all in all, I think a series of nice ideas on the Degalim.